Welcome back to another episode of Talking Stocks. My name is Joe, beside Todd Campbell, as always. Todd, how are you this week?
Doing okay, a little bloodied. It's been a little bit of a tough week for growth investors.
Yeah, I definitely have a few scars from this week. I was just looking at my Fidelity terminal, and I'm about flat today.
A win.
Yeah, there are some winners and some losers this week, and we'll get into all of that. So just to give you guys a little agenda for what we've got coming up on the show today, we're gonna talk about we've talked about inflation a lot on the show recently. It's a big concern. There's more proof that it's actively happening, biggest or highest rate of inflation since the early 80s. For those of you who were alive then, you're probably thinking back a little bit nervously about that. So we'll get into what might be a little bit of a silver lining for some of our older listeners out there. Then we're going to have a little conversation, a little back and forth about our investing styles, as Todd was saying before I hit record. It's important to know thyself. So, you know, where we individually kind of fall into different groups of investors. Then we'll get into our recent trades again. I know Todd was very busy this week. I only made one trade, but it's a good one. So we'll get into that. And then we'll get into our smattering of stocks we might buy soon. So Todd, I'll let you kick it off with inflation and our little surprise.
Yeah, I mean, everybody looks at inflation and says, oh my God, this is horrible. The cost of everything is going up. And, you know, the one maybe silver lining, as you've accurately said, or bright spot, or however you want to look at it, is that every year, Social Security looks at inflation relative to the last time they gave a annual increase. And if the inflation rate is higher than that comparison period, it will actually bump up the amount that it pays people who are receiving Social Security checks every month. So the silver lining of rising inflation is the potential for, you know, the 60 million or whatever, however many retirees out there, retired workers are that are out there. The silver lining may be that they're going to get more money in their monthly paycheck next year, Joe. And that would be huge when you think about last year's increase. For this year. So they make this decision in October, Joe, every year, and they base it on the third quarter inflation rate, the CPIW, relative to the third quarter of the last year in which they did the COLA increase. So since they increased it for 2021 last October, they'll be comparing this third quarter number to last year's third quarter number. In June, Joe, CPIW was up 6.1%. Which is scary, right? On the, because you look at that and you say, that is crazy, explosive inflation. And especially when you think realize that the CPIW was up 5.5% in the quarter overall. So it's an acceleration. It was higher in May than it was in April. CPIW was higher in June than it was in May. And the June number is higher than the three-quarter average. So if these numbers match the June numbers throughout July, August, and September, that 6.1% read in June, that would mean that Social Security recipients could get a 6.1% bump up in their Social Security checks beginning in January. And Joe, the average, you know, retirees, you know, getting about $1,550 per month. So, I mean, this, every little 6% is a lot.
That, you know, is a lot.
There's a lot of people out there who will be cheering that news on one side, and then, of course, hoping that inflation falls sharply next year, so that actually their buying power is better, right?
Exactly. Yeah. From the perspective of you know, the two of us are fairly far off from receiving Social Security. I would say I am extremely far off. But yeah, 6.1% inflation is definitely concerning as somebody myself who is about to enter the workforce. So certainly something to watch. And we'll we'll be keeping an eye on that potential cost of living adjustment, as people always say, COLA. Anything else you want to touch on regarding Social Security, Todd?
No, I mean, Social Security is designed to replace about 40% of the average retired worker's pre-retirement income. And it's a pretty complex calculation that Social Security does to figure out exactly how much you're going to get in monthly benefits, which would be a great topic for an upcoming show. Listeners, if you'd like us to dive into that, happy to do it. Just drop a note in the comments and let us know. And we'll explain that and maybe offer some tips and tricks to try and boost your Social Security income. Yeah, those COLA increases are important. I think the one thing that I would also add on that COLA topic is that we have to remember that they base the COLA on CPIW, and CPIW is the inflation for the average worker, right? The W is for workers. These are retirees. So the expenses that a retiree has are not necessarily the same expenses that a worker has. For example, they spend way more on healthcare than does, say, the average person of working age. So there's a big argument out there, Joe, that for decades, this whole tying the COLA to CPIW is a huge mistake because it doesn't accurately reflect the inflation that seniors may be facing. And you know, there's been studies out there that have shown that the buying power of a senior is actually 30% less than it was 20 years ago, 30% less. I mean, that's obviously not good, especially if you're on a fixed income in retirement. So I think these COLA increases are very, very, very important to many, many Americans, should provide a little bit more, hopefully, discretionary income for retirees. And let's hope that, you know, we do see some normalizing of inflation in 2022 so that the buying power, you know, is evident because of the COLA.
Yeah. All right. So with that, I think we'll move on to a bit more of a two-sided discussion. We want to talk about our just kind of our investing style. Are you a margin trader? Are you a day trader? Are you a long-term hodler, as we're calling it now? What I'll do to start us off is I'll pull up this poll that Todd shared on Twitter this morning, which is pretty telling. So let me just refresh this, make sure we're not missing out on any votes. Oh, we've got a few more. So 77% of people say that they are long-term holders, which I think implies that they're not trading very actively. They're probably buying and selling, I would say, less than a dozen times a year. Would you agree with that, Todd?
Yeah, I mean, if you're long-term, I mean, think about it from the capital gains tax rate. Where do the capital gains tax rates become long-term after 1 year? Yep. So your goal when you're entering the position is to say to yourself, I'm going to hold this for at least 1 year and I may end up holding it forever. But, you know, it's definitely at least a year. In my view, I think that's the way to define it. And then the way I would define swing trading is, you know, you're opportunistic. You'll take something on and you may hold it for a week. You may hold it for multiple weeks. You may hold it for months. When the trend stops being your friend, you'll exit the position. And then, of course, you've got the day trader, which in my view, you can cheat and sometimes hold things overnight, hoping for a bounce the next day or whatever. But in the traditional sense, a day trader would be settling up every day and coming in the next day to see what they can win.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to sum that up. So with that, we're kind of looking inward. We're looking in the mirror here, looking at our own video feeds on our screens and asking ourselves where we fall in that spectrum personally. So Todd, I think I know what your response is going to be here. And I think you're going to say that you're a swing trader, but I'll let you speak for yourself.
Yeah, I've evolved. You know, Joe, if there's a way to trade or try to make money in stocks, I've done it. and you know, I think that it's so, so important, Joe, to understand and to know thyself, as you kind of hinted towards earlier in the conversation. You have to find the approach that matches your particular mental, you know, capability or whatever, right? I mean, if you are somebody who mentally can't handle the rapids up and downs, gains and losses of being a day trader, then you shouldn't be day trading, right?
Exactly.
You have to find, so if you're somebody who, you know, because of your work life, you're not at this full time or whatever, but you like to research individual companies, you like to deep dive into them, maybe you're more, you know, destined to be a long-term buy and holder. You're going to stick with something unless your thesis breaks, and you're going to hope, you know, go into every single trade hoping to own it for at least a year, and hopefully for decades upon decades upon decades. And I think that most investors don't fully understand, because of FOMO and because of other things, they don't really understand what they are when they first get started. You know, they may start off being a value investor and then they become a growth investor. They may start off day trading and then realize that they can't, you know, stomach day trading, so they go to position trading, and then they go to long-term buy and holding. So, I mean, it's an evolution in some ways for some people, but I think the earlier that you get started in being honest with yourself about the type of person you are, what you're, you know, I don't even know the right way to explain it really, Joe, but what your mindset, I guess mindset is a good way of looking at it, what your mindset kind of defaults to, and then matching your trading style, your investing style to that. I think the sooner you can do that, the better. And I would love it in the comments if people just said, hey, I'm a long-term, or I'm a day trader, or I'm a swing trader, and kind of give a quick, you know, explanation of what their style is. I think that would be a fun and fascinating thing. So again, if you're following us on YouTube, thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. It does help us when you subscribe and like the video. So please smash that like, hit the bell so you're notified of all the content that we're putting up. If you're listening to us on one of the podcast platforms, thank you so much for being one of the thousands and thousands of people who tune every week to listen to us on those platforms. But yes, I think it's important to kind of think to yourself, okay, and be honest with yourself about the type of investor that you are. In my case, Joe, it's been more of that slow evolution, and I wish it had happened faster. You know, I back in the late 90s, when I first got in the business, I was very active trader. I don't know if I would consider myself a day trader, but I definitely did try day trading at different points. I also used options, and I used margin, and I did all sorts of things that caused me to blow up my account multiple times in the first decade of my career. And that tuition paid helped to shape the investor that I am today. I would say that I'm best described as a hybrid trader, in that I won't day trade. Maybe one day trade a year, if even that. I can't even remember the last time I tried to do a day trade. I go into stocks, as you know, with the mindset of either it's a forever stock or a rental. So again, we're talking mindset here. So for me, a forever stock would be that long-term buy and hold. You know, my intention is to stick with this because it's a disruptive stock. I love the story. I love the growth. I love everything about it. And I'm not going to get shaken out just because of the price action in a given day, in a given week, even in a given multi-month period. There are stocks that I will own that are broken technically that are forever stocks for me. And I'm just like, okay, whatever. You know, I've got good entries on them. I'm still up on the names. I'm just going to ride those out. So I would define probably the majority of my portfolio as holdings that I've had more than 1 year. I would say that a smaller segment, maybe 30% probably of my portfolio is what I would call the rentals. And the rentals are more of the swing trade variety, where I'm looking at specific catalysts. And it could be that they're tied to the business cycle trade. So, you know, names like cyclicals, energy stocks, steel stocks, infrastructure stocks, those kind of things where, you know, maybe I'll end up owning for a year, but that's neither here nor there. I'm buying with the idea that I'm not going to own them for it as a forever type of an idea. Maybe biotech, where I'm looking at a particular catalyst, like a phase 3 or phase 2 readout, or a FDA decision, something like that, catalyst driven, those would also be rentals. So I consider myself to be a hybrid. That works really well for me. I find that when I was doing day trading and using margin, using options, I couldn't manage my risk right. It did not feel right to me. And it wasn't until I started extending my horizon, my time horizon, that I started to feel more comfortable and had less stress. My stomach stopped churning. I could sleep at night. Joe, how about you?
So I was just using my portfolio to kind of figure out like where I fall, at least as far as, you know, what I can prove on paper. And I definitely fall into that same hybrid camp. But I was just looking and I'm about 50-50 stocks that I've bought in the last year and stocks that I've owned for more than a year. So this has definitely evolved for me over fewer years. So hopefully I'm getting to that point now where I have a balanced mindset. I don't think I'm quite there yet. I still have some laggards that I'm just not quite willing to cut loose yet. But yeah, same thing with you, Todd. I mean, I own, I think 22 or 24 stocks, something like that. That'll increase a little bit over time. I'd like to get that into the 50 range as I start to save and increase my assets. So for now, about 50% of those have turned into forever stocks. Some of them I intended to keep that way from the get-go. Visa and MasterCard are two prime examples of that. Some others that have just kind of turned into forever stocks would be like IBM. I've owned for probably a year and a half now. I think Target as well, I've owned for over a year. So for me, it's less of like thinking I'm going to buy this and hold it for a certain period of time. It's more, okay, when is this, especially now that I have access to all these great charts and information and research, it's more when does the fundamental analysis break on this? And if there's a big losing streak and I go from up 50% to up 40% in a matter of a few days, I might think about cutting that one loose. So to kind of sum that up and wrap it up, I'd say, yeah, I'm definitely a hybrid trader, but I probably fall a little bit more into that kind of mid-range hold for a few months, 6 months sort of camp.
And you know, that's not to knock. I agree, Joe, that I think it's just because we happen to be more of the longer term, you know, whether or not we're talking a matter of months extending into years or whatever, doesn't mean that you can't make money being a shorter term trader. And we certainly have people who are using our research every week to fill their watch lists with great stocks that they can use to day trade. Free link below if you want to trial to the research, the idea generation. You know, so there's nothing wrong necessarily on its footprint with day trading. I think where people run into the biggest risk, if you have a very short period of time, is where you're trading for a very short period of time, be it a day or the next day or whatever, is risk control. I know very few over my long, I've been at this since the late 90s, and I can count on one hand the number of people who were day trading then that are day trading now. Most of them end up wiping out. And one of the reasons that they, and if they don't wipe out, they're forced to put more cash in to support the account. That's why they're not wiped out. You know, they got a margin call or whatever. So I think that if you don't use margin and you have just crazy good discipline, you know, you're kind of like the Mark Minervini of day trading, if you will, where it's like, okay, immediately didn't work. I'm out. I don't care. These are products on a shelf. I'm not addicted one way or the other to them. I'm literally just trying to play price. I'm not going to let any other bias get into my way on it. Then great. You know, that's good. But I think it takes a very, very particular mindset to succeed over time with kind of that day, with a more of a day trading or very, very short term approach. And I think it's just doing the homework now, the mental work now to figure out where you land on that spectrum is very important, because we've been in this raging bull market, Joe, right, for this long time, and it's made you look good regardless if you're a short-term or long-term investor, right? So yep. You have to be honest with yourself and realize that, well, I've had this huge tailwind to my back, so I'm day trading and I'm making money, great, but how much of that is because of the tailwind versus your own risk discipline, your own rules that you're following, that kind of thing. Be honest with yourself now. Now's the time to do that. Now's the time to, when the going's good is the time to have those, that soul searching moment.
Yeah. One thing that just popped into my head as we were having this conversation is it would be interesting to, to hear what if there's a if people fall into that long-term buy and hold camp because they want to or because they just kind of have to, right? Because they don't have the time. Like Todd and I, we kind of fall into the mid to long-term because we have, you know, we've got day jobs. We have other things we do in life. We've got families and dogs and, you know, hobbies and stuff that keeps us busy. I can't be sitting at my Fidelity terminal for hours every day just waiting for the right time to buy stock XYZ. So I think for a lot of people, it's probably the same thing. They're just buying and holding stocks in their IRA. And they're happy with that. And hey, it works for a lot of people. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I have to say though, I do applaud the day traders who have been doing it for a long time, because that is just exhausting looking at a screen and like waiting for the exact right tick that you're looking for. I can't imagine doing that myself. I was thinking back and I figured I've made precisely one day trade in my life and I lost money on it and I will probably never do it again. So that's my take on that, Todd. I don't know if that, I don't, it would be interesting. I'd love to hear in the comments or on Twitter or Discord or whatever, however you want to reach us. We love to hear from our subscribers, our listeners and our viewers, just exactly for those of you who do fall into that buy and hold for a long time camp, if that's more out of necessity or if that's a choice you make.
Well, the other way to go at that too, Joe, is you said right out of necessity because you have a full-time job. I'm not gonna be staring tick by tick by tick trying to figure out if I can make 10 cents on a particular stock over and over and over again. That's one part of it. And then the other part of it could be that, you know, how many people, because of their own mindset, can't take the loss, ended up becoming buy and hold investors, not because they went into the stock thinking I would be a buy and hold investor, but because the stock went down, they lost money and they just didn't have the mental fortitude to cut bait. And now they're like rewriting their
I've done that.
Forgetting it.
Yes, saying, okay, I have done that with several stocks over the years. And I've gotten better recently, especially in the past few months, of just cutting those loose. Because for me, what's really helpful is to go in and look at my overall portfolio performance. So to see I'm up however many percent over, you know, all time, but then also to see, oh, hey, look, I'm still beating the S&P 500. So if I cut this stock loose, that's down 8%, 10%, in some cases, it's like 30%. I'll be completely honest. If I cut that loose, it's actually better for me, because then I can deploy that money. I can deploy that cash into something that's better and that will kind of turn me around quicker than if I just held that same whatever it is for 10 years waiting for it to come back.
Right. There's nothing in the rule books that says every individual stock is going to come back to our price. So right. You run the risk of having massive opportunity cost. Can you imagine owning, I don't know, General Electric and not taking that loss to buy Amazon?
Yeah.
Back in 2000 or something? You know, I mean, there are so many good ideas. So you have to consider the opportunity cost. I agree with you. And I think it's just, that's a great point, Joe.
Yeah. And I think just to wrap this up, like I would encourage all of you to do that. Go into your, log into your brokerage or your IRA and just see like year to date and over the past calendar year, how does it line up with the S&P 500 performance? I think the S&P 500 is like 35 to 40% in the past year. And so if you're up more than that, then congratulations, what you're doing is working. You don't have to be up a lot more than that, because let's face it, this has been an incredible run. But if you're not beating the S&P 500, then go and look at your holdings and figure out what you should really be cutting loose. And honestly, you might want to get a little bit more kind of trigger happy with it.
Yeah, you could just sort them. I always, when I'm looking to, there, I will sometimes make changes on the margin when I want to raise a little bit of cash during periods where I think I could get better entry points. And I'm trying to be very, very disciplined about that. I will sort my portfolio by return. And I will start looking at the ones that are my worst returners to say, is my thesis intact on these names or am I just being hopeful? And I'll go down through each one to make sure before I do any other trimming or activity. So maybe that'll be a useful tip for some folks out there too.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. So I think we'll move on now. And we're going to move on to our recent trades. So last week, I promised everybody we'd do this more frequently. And so here we are. We're doing it 2 weeks in a row. So for me, I'll just get us started here because I only have one thing to share. Todd, I know you have like a bazillion. So my only trade was I opened a position in Square, symbol SQ. It's one I've wanted to own for a long time now. And it was never at a really attractive price to me. It always seemed kind of overvalued, but it's been trading pretty flat. So here's the chart. It's been trading pretty flat since really the beginning of the year, honestly. Beginning of January, it was at in the 240s and it's at 238 right now. I think I bought it 236 or something like that. So I'm looking for that one to be a pretty long-term holding for me. It could turn into a forever stock. I see all sorts of research and commentary and due diligence on Twitter and on Seeking Alpha and all the other platforms where you can get great information. And everybody is just raving about Square and how they're already huge, but can potentially be so much bigger.
Yo, I'm curious, do you use Cash App?
I actually don't. I use usually like between friends and family, I use Venmo. I have a PayPal account, but I don't even remember why I opened it. I can't recall using it.
In your group of people that you know, are there any other quick money transferring apps that they use outside of either Cash App or Venmo?
Maybe PayPal, but
which is really, that's a Venmo. Venmo is a PayPal product.
Exactly. It's primarily Venmo, but Cash App has a ton of users. Some people are using it. I don't know who those people are. If you use it, let us know. But yeah, honestly, for me, it was more, it was not really about Cash App because I think that space is already pretty flooded. And I think that PayPal has a pretty distinct advantage. It was more their small business platform. The fact that they have like a really nice and sleek all-in-one sort of app and functionality. I've used it before in like summer jobs and it's a little bit expensive, but it's so easy to use and it just has everything in one place in like an iPad app. So I found that to be pretty remarkable. And so, yeah, here we are.
Right, Joe. And they keep innovating. They keep, you know, coming out with new tools that are going to help those small business owners capture more and more money. And I think that is critical. And then they're also now with the consumer facing products, you know, the Cash App is enabling, you know, you've got the cryptocurrency kind of trading aspect to it. You've got all sorts of other products that you can kind of morph into it. And as you can see, just looking at the chart again, we've got displayed, if you're listening on one of the platforms to the podcast, we do post these on YouTube. So you can also go on and just see the charts that we're looking at on YouTube. But I've got the MarketSmith chart up that shows the revenue over time. And you can see, look at that acceleration in revenue the last three quarters, Joe, going from 140% year-over-year growth to 141% year-over growth to 266% year-over-year growth. We're talking about $5 billion in revenue. Yeah. So to generate that kind of growth, I mean, obviously over time, you're going to see that normalize, the law of big numbers, right? But geez, when you're talking about that kind of acceleration in revenue, you tend to get a lot of leverage in your business on operating margin that helps earnings. And if you look at those earnings, you've got the company going from 47 cents in EPS in 2018 to an expected $1.53 in 2021 to up another 38% expected in 2022 to $2.11. This is, I've owned this a long time. I'm up a lot. I think I'm up 700 or 800% on it. This is a forever stock in my portfolio. And I'm just, it's a very exciting. So I'm glad to see that that was one of the ones you added to your portfolio. Hopefully we can win in this one together.
Yeah, it's an exciting one. I think they're going to be a behemoth pretty soon, right up there next to PayPal. So that'll be a fun one to watch. Todd, I know you've been busy this week, so dive right in.
I have. I really believe in planning trades and trading plans. This is something that I talked about with members, my teammates and my peers way back in the day in the early 2000s. We were carving out different rules that we wanted to live or die by. And, you know, we would go by each other's offices. We'd yell, trade a plan, you know, plan a trade at each other just to remind ourselves of how important it is to stick with rules. I mean, there are some great investors that have post-it notes where they just put it right up on their screen. These are my rules, you know, just as a visual reminder that, you know, geez, if you're violating your rules, you've got a problem. In the past, I had already said to myself, I'm going to lighten up my exposure and raise a little bit of cash into the mid-July period. So that's what I did earlier this week. I went through my portfolio. I sorted by my biggest losers at the top, started going through my biggest losers to see, okay, are these rentals or forever stocks? And of the rentals, has the catalyst passed or has something changed? Is this a name that I kind of, you know, borrowed conviction from others on and I really didn't do my own due diligence on? Is this something that I was planning on holding more than, you know, a couple months or not? So I kind of went through that and I raised some cash, sold a bunch of things that had gotten sloppy, that weren't forever portfolio names for me. And then I went out and I redeployed some of that into the weakness we saw midweek. And a couple of the stocks we talked about last week's show. So if you didn't see last week's show, we did highlight every week, we go through a smattering of ideas from our research, free link below, again, for the trial of our idea generation machine. So I go through and we highlight some ideas that we may think, you know, offer some opportunity to put into portfolio. So I did spend some money on a couple of those names. I guess what I'll do, Joe, is I'll bring up my portfolio, my charts again, so people can see them. So you can see them on Square, which is the name that Joe just mentioned. The two from the show last week that I bought were Nari, Inari Medical, symbol there is NARI. Develops products to treat and transform venous disease surgery. So rather than using things that have been repurposed from arterial surgery, they're using things, developing products that are specifically designed for use in removing blood clots from the veins. And they've generated significant revenue growth, over 100% year over year in each of the last three quarters. And they are profitable with earnings expected to grow 42% this year. Now, technically, I bought it here on the violation of the 200-day moving average. My thinking is that it will probably find support somewhere in a channel here between 78 and, with the top of the channel is 127. So if we violate below here, then I would reevaluate it. My assumption here is that this is starting off as a rental stock for me. My idea is that it's displacing the use of some of these other arterial alternatives, but I want to see that confirmed over time with, again, increasing revenue, increasing profitability. The other one from the show's ideas last week that I bought was BioLife Solutions, hypothermic storage and biopreservation media products for cell tissue and organs. So again, they're doing freezers and refrigeration for shipping and storing for companies that are developing gene therapies. And that's of course a huge research market, and also refrigeration for the storage of drugs, things like the COVID vaccines, et cetera. You saw this big violation where it dropped here of the 21-day moving average. I bought it right in there, right around the 21-day moving average, a little bit below it, with them thinking that, you know what, this thing could hold and rally off of there. I also bought more, Joe. I increased my average cost in space. This is a stock we've talked a lot about on the show the last few weeks. The more and more I think about the optionality of this company, the more and more I think that there is a mega trend in space that is going to be decades long. There are not many pure plays that I can invest in space right now. Virgin Galactic is one of them. The symbol there is SPCE. I think my average cost was about $15 per share. It is now about $17 per share. My hope is here that it holds the 200, but I don't care. I really don't care. This is a forever name for me. I'm just sticking it away, and we'll see where it goes from here. And then the next and last one that I added to, or bought actually, new position for me is Upwork, UPWK. And this is a stock that it basically helps people hire people that they would use as 1099 employees. So contract employees to do any number of things for them in, you know, for professional stuff. Could be building a website, could be writing an article, could be doing a blog, could be editing something, could be graphic design, could be whatever. Upwork helps facilitate that in the reporting and the tracking of that. And I just think that that's a huge, huge market opportunity as more and more people take advantage of the gig economy. You see revenue growth up about 37% last quarter to 113 million. And we are expected to be profitable next year, about 9 cents per share. You can see this big breakout here, Joe. If people who are listening to the show, I'll try to explain what I'm looking at. We previously peaked on price for the stock around $64. And you can see that earlier in the week, we actually got up to $64.49. which was above that 63.88 peak in February, intraday peak. Sure enough, we saw profit taking. This often happens when stocks break out because you have people who have been holding a long time. Maybe they bought back in February near the peak, who have just been praying to get back to flat. So you have them selling it. And then you also have people who've owned it for a very long time who are saying, wow, I've just made a lot of money. I'm going to book this trade and I'm going to move on and look for other ideas. I usually get very nervous about a big volume reversal like that, that next day where we drop 17%. So I said, okay, I'm not gonna buy it today, but I am gonna see if it trades down tomorrow at the 50-day moving average. And if it does, I'll pick up shares then. And that was what I did yesterday. I picked up some shares right around the 50-day moving average when it opened down. And I think this is a great big market opportunity. I like the stock. I'm a little bit suspect on the volume sell day there. But that was also a really tough day for high growth stocks. So a lot of people were unwinding high growth stocks on that day. So I don't know how much of it was Upwork specific versus kind of just market specific. So I'm going to give it a little bit of a pass and we'll see how it goes from here. So those were the four stocks that I bought this week. And then Joe, on the sell side, I did sell and trim a bunch of things that I was less convinced in, had lower conviction in, and that brought my cash back to about 5%, just to give people who've listened to the show for a long time a little bit of flavor, because you'll know from listening over time that I will adjust my cash up and down a little bit to give myself some breathing room at periods where I feel like the market could be a little shaky.
Yep. For what it's worth, I am also at about 5% cash right now. So, but I'm actively looking to deploy that. So I think with that, we will move on to our smattering. So time for more charts. Listeners, we'll do our best to walk you through these. These are the stocks that, as you just saw or heard, we very well might buy in the next week. So Todd, how do you want to do this? We each have four or five. So
yeah, this is awesome, guys. So we're trying something new here. We're going to go back and forth. Joe and I are going to go back and forth. Longtime listeners know that we typically do these smatterings that can be about 10 stocks or so that we're pulling from the research. Again, thank you so much for tuning in every week, listening to the podcast, watching us on YouTube. We really do appreciate your support. Please like and subscribe so that the Google overlords will reward us. I think, Joe, maybe if we just go back and forth, maybe if you want to start us off with an idea and we'll
we can just popcorn it back and forth. So
sure. And do you want me to bring up the charts?
That would be great. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So we're gonna start off. So these are, I believe all four of mine all have 100 scores in our research, which is a very good score. So first one is going to be Paychex, P-A-Y-X. And what Paychex does, if you're not familiar, the name might give it away. So they're a human resources platform. Some companies use ADP, some use Workday, and some use Paychex. So Paychex is somewhat of the of the elephant in the room. They've been around for a long time, so they're not going to have, you know, ridiculous revenue and EPS growth numbers, but very steady growth. And it's a heck of a chart too. I mean, that is it every time it touches the 21 day or even the 50 day moving average, it jumps right back up way above. So
yes, in September of 2020, Joe, when it broke out above the 200 day moving average and had some follow through, every time, basically, yeah. Even if it may undercut it for short periods, but it's been tracking that 50-day perfectly all the way up as it's been rallying.
Yeah. So a couple of things that I like about this one. It's got a nice little dividend yield, 2.34%. They're very profitable. They'll earn $3.38 per share in 2022. That'll be an 11% increase, and then $3.59 in 2023, which will be a 6% increase. So again, not huge growth, but a very nice steady stock that's probably a bit more of a defensive play.
Yeah, you know what I like about companies like this, Joe, is that in this again, I love these dividend paying stocks that screen well in our research, because you get the best of both worlds. You get the capital appreciation, right, of the stock heading higher, but then you also can benefit from rising. And you can see in June 19, or, you know, back in early 19, they increased their dividend, and they increased their dividend again recently this year. So you get the benefit of the rising dividend, like I mentioned, yielding 2.3%. One of the things that jumps out at me, this stock, Joe, is interesting. 5.8 days to cover held short. And the only thing that I can assume there, Joe, is that that's a lot of people betting that unemployment can't stay low, that job growth will roll over. And as job growth rolls over and people become unemployed, they'll collect less money per employee, covered by their platform. That's the only thing.
Could it also be that folks are just a little bit more concerned about the competitors that are in the space,
there are a lot of them
that are large? I mean, I'm sure there are dozens of them besides just ADP and Workday, but those are the two big ones that come to mind that I've used in the past at various jobs.
Yeah. And Paycom is another one. And then what is it? Yeah. Paylocity is another one. Yeah. There are a lot of kind of these up and coming disruptive digital footprint first kind of players that are kind of challenging ADP and paychecks. And maybe to your point, people are betting that they'll win market share away from these two legacy players, but that's a tough game in a way, because, you know, the legacy players are very well embedded into those large enterprise accounts, and they certainly have the deep enough pockets to be able to provide those same digital services over time, to basically, you know, pick the best of what's working for these smaller competitors. So it's an interesting space to watch, and certainly one worth adding to the watch list. So it's a good first one. I guess for my first one, Joe, I'm going to bring up Bristol-Myers Squibb. Bristol-Myers, BMY is the symbol there. It's a little bit of a sloppy chart, but it's been trending upwards since March. And again, one of the things we talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago is I really wanted to start to increase my exposure to the healthcare arena, because I do believe that the business cycle is maturing and we're getting more towards that mid and late cycle period where we're going to see tightening of interest rates and maybe a little bit more economic volatility that translates into stock price volatility. Historically, what that's meant is that baskets that are relatively inelastic to the economic swings, the whims and whispers of the economy, tend to hold up better than some of the other parts of the market. Healthcare being one of the most inelastic sectors you can get. Obviously, if you're diagnosed with a life-threatening disease, you don't care what the economy is doing. You're going to beg, borrow, steal, whatever, to get the treatment that you need. And Bristol-Myers has really pretty good exposure to oncology. So, I mean, if you're diagnosed with cancer, that's a very inelastic diagnosis, right, Joe? So I think that Bristol-Myers Squibb makes a lot of sense on those fronts. It is integrating still its Celgene acquisition. It has Opdivo, which is a PD-1 checkpoint inhibitor, which is one of the best-selling cancer drugs in the world. It also markets Revlimid, which it acquired when it bought Celgene. And it's got some new gene therapies, including CAR-Ts for multiple myeloma that have recently been approved, expected to earn $8.07 in 2022 and trading at $67 right now. So you're talking about like what, a 7 or 8 times forward PE ratio. I think that that's a pretty good deal for this company at these levels. What else can I tell you? Oh, and the dividend yield is about 2.9% there, Joe.
Yeah. All right. So going into a completely different sector now, my next one is Yum Brands, Y-U-M. So they operate Pizza Hut, KFC, and Taco Bell restaurants. They have over 50,000 restaurant locations Wow. across the world. So this is, everybody knows this brand and these restaurants. Certainly everybody's eaten at least one of these, if not all three, if not
Do you have a favorite, Joe?
Quite honestly, they're all good and bad in their own ways. I know the least favorite would be Taco Bell, but the favorite, I really couldn't choose. I think they're both incredibly mediocre. But said,
stuffed crust pizza though.
That said, mediocre food makes money. So that's what we're here for. We're here for that awesome EPS growth there on the left. So you'll see 17% EPS growth from last year to this year, and another 11% from this year to next, which is pretty good considering that they already have 50,000 restaurant locations. So this is another 100 score in our research. You see there it's been trading pretty flat. The 21-day just dipped below the 50-day. So there's some room for this one to run up a little bit, and Todd's got the weekly chart up now. So you can see it's been challenging its old highs from 2019.
Yeah, and Joe, I'm going to get a 1.7% dividend kicker on this one, which is nice. Going to repurchase $2 billion worth of common stock. They announced that in May, so you get that tailwind working for you. And I think it's really just kind of like that, you know, hey, we're all vaccinated now. Let's get back in our cars and drive and go somewhere. And on our way, we're getting hungry. So let's swing in and get some food from one of these restaurants. That could be the big play there.
That's right. All right, Todd, you're up.
All right, sticking with healthcare on my side, bringing up AbbVie, ABBV is the ticker symbol there. And AbbVie is probably best known for Humira, which is a mega blockbuster drug. It is the best-selling drug of all time with well over $120 billion in total sales for that drug over its history. The big knock against AbbVie for worry against AbbVie for the last few years is that this company's Humira is going to face generic competition at some point. And when it does, because it accounts for such a large percentage of AbbVie's revenue, this company is going to suffer. Well, AbbVie's leadership has done a great job, in my view, of pivoting the company and insulating it a little bit against the Humira headwind. And in the US, they'll face off against some biologic competitors beginning in 2023. One of the reasons that this stock, I think, is rallying right now, Joe, and you can see on the chart that I've got displayed, that it is challenging its May high of 118. It's actually made challenge and clear into the pivot zone today on that stock, is because one of its deals was to buy the maker of Botox, Joe. And one of the hottest areas in medical right now in the post-COVID experience are aesthetic oriented companies. So, hey, listen, you know, COVID was rough on all of us. and certainly I think there's going to be an increase in people maybe who are going in for a Botox treatment. I would not be surprised, especially since companies like InMode recently, which does RF ablations to improve, I guess, to do different treatments to your skin and to everything, they just upped their guidance recently. I wouldn't be surprised if Botox is a big seller this quarter. So maybe that's one of the reasons that it's rallying. In the quarter ending March, up 51% sales were to $13 billion per quarter. And you're still expected to see double digit 19% EPS growth in 21 and 10% EPS growth in 22. And the other final thing I would say on this stock is that, you know, yes, they've known that Humira is going to be, you know, running into the end of its life, loss of exclusivity, LOE. And as a result, they've launched other drugs targeting Humira's indications, like Skyrizi in psoriasis. And that's now, like, I think the second most prescribed drug behind Humira within that indication. And of course, it has patent protection stretching out, you know, into the 2030s. So they're insulating themselves a little that way too. So again, nice dividend yield, 4.4%, defensive inelastic bass care and healthcare, and a potential tailwind from post-COVID interest in Botox.
All right. So next up for me, I've got two left. We're going to go with Iron Mountain first, symbol there, IRM. So I used to own this stock, actually, bought in the mid 20s and sold in the low 40s. I do not own it currently, but might be interested at this price point. You see it touching the 21 and the 50 day moving averages there. Got a little bit of a kink to work out where the 21 day dipped below the 50 day. Not too worrying right now. This is a really strong, well-established company. So they deal with like document storage and disposal for companies. So they've been around for many, many years dealing with the physical documents. So they're essentially like a fire safe that you can bring all your company's important documents to and store them in a safe place rather than keeping them on site. So the big play for them for the future is going to be data centers. And so they're starting to pivot into this now. Also, I didn't mention this is a REIT. So it's a way to get into that sector. Really nice dividend yield of 5.6% that Todd is highlighting there. And this one is definitely worth watching. They're one of the, I'd say they're one of the behemoths in the industry. And so if they can get well established in the data center industry as well, they will be around for a very long time. And I think this is a pretty attractive price right now to consider buying at.
Yeah, and look at this, Joe. I just pulled up the monthly chart. This is all-time highs for the company. That is great. There's no more overhead supply on this stock. This is wide open territory range, if you will. And, you know, with a high scoring stock that's pulling back a little bit and is trading near its all-time highs, I do like that setup a lot, especially since, Joe, there's 12.8 days to cover still held short. Those people are wrong, have been wrong, and are probably looking for some opportunity to cover their position. So my assumption would be that if we do pull back, even if we pull all the way back into the mid 30s, back to that prior pivot point, that you would have some tailwind or support coming in from people who are looking to get on the right side of that trade after having been wrong. All right, I'm sticking with healthcare, Joe.
Stick with what works.
So United Healthcare, biggest insurer in the country for health insurance, just reported their second quarter figures. Revenue was up 15% year over year to $71 billion. And 2021 earnings are now expected to come in at $18.58, up 10% from 2020. And 2022 growing another 15% to $21.41. So I think this is, it's not necessarily a cheap stock for a, you know, big behemoth company that's likely going to grow revenue in the mid to single digits, but it is the premier player. And Joe, listen, you know, the nation is getting older. More and more people are going to be going on to Medicare. They have a huge Medicare Advantage business. And people are living longer. So they're living longer, more people, you know, getting past that 65 years old, getting onto Medicare. They also have a big Medicaid business. And that business could benefit from any healthcare reform that expands Medicaid benefits to more people. So there are a lot of potential tailwinds, I think, and reasons to have United Healthcare in portfolios. And, you know, not a big dividend, but 1.4%, heck, we'll take that as a little bonus, if you will.
All right. So my last stock for the day is Trex, T-R-E-X. easy to remember. The company and the symbol are the same. So they manufacture, they call it wood alternative. Think about like vinyl decking and stuff like that. So we've been talking about it for many months now. The whole surge in home building and home buying, also the lumber shortage, which has kind of subsided, it seems, but there's a huge wildfire season already occurring out west. So one could figure that there could be another lumber shortage in another few months. So this is a great play. I thought this was a really interesting one because this company's been around for a long time, but look at that EPS growth. Going up to $2.05 this year from $1.55 last year. That's 32%. And then another 18% the following year projected in 2022. So they're a nice profitable company. I don't think the valuation is too insane, and it might be a nice point to enter right now as it's just below those 21 and 50 day moving averages.
Hey Joe, you know, one of the things that I first learned in the business, the first thing they teach you, the thing that, you know, everybody needs to recognize, that stocks do follow earnings over time. And what a great example in Trex. I mean, look at from 2014 through the expected in 2022, every year it's increased 32 cents to 42, up and up and up to that 242 next year that is defined. And then if you look at the price, 11 in 2014, it's increased all the way up to, you know, the high in 2020 was 87. The high this year in April when lumber was going to the moon and people were like, well, that just kind of leveled the playing field on the cost of, you know, composite decking versus lumber, got all the way up to 111. So I think that, you know, maybe it's come back down recently because lumber prices are coming back down. And there are some people out there who are saying, well, if lumber's falling, maybe there's less of an edge in going out and buying composite. But regardless of lumber prices over time, people have been adopting, you know, Trex decking because, you know, you can get 20 years out of it without, you know, any kind of fading or cracking or needing to replace or rot or anything like that. So yeah, very interesting and certainly a good reminder that yes, indeed, stocks do follow earnings over time, Joe. All right, my last one is, it's not a healthcare. Joe, I'll let you be the decision maker on whether or not it's a healthcare company or not. It is Innovative Industrial Properties, IIPR. It's a REIT, kind of like Iron Mount that you mentioned previously. So it has to pay out a certain amount of its income to its shareholders every year. And it targets the industrial real estate assets used for growing medical marijuana. So they are basically, you know, they've got the facilities that people then would be renting out or coming into some sort of a contract with them to use to grow cannabis that can then be sold through retailers, either both the medical side or on the recreational side. Whether or not they call this a healthcare stock, I will leave
that. I think this would fall into like healthcare support sort of. Yeah. So in the same vein as like Optimize RX, where it's not actual healthcare, they're not providing care or insurance, but they're providing something that in turn provides care.
Right. And you know what? This is my favorite way. If you're not really comfortable going out and taking the pure play risk on buying any one individual marijuana stock, marijuana producer, this is kind of a good backdoor way of being able to get exposure to the space. They did see a revenue grow over 100% in the March quarter to about $43 million. In 2022, they're expected to see earnings grow 36% to over $9 per share. They've raised their dividend both in December and again in June. And I think right now, they're yielding about 2.7%, which is solid. Certainly, that's better than the S&P 500 yield. And there is 6 days to cover short in the stock, probably because of the marijuana risk. So the big question here, Joe, would be, will marijuana be legalized federally? And if it is, will that drive, kind of when liquor was back in the, I think it was the 30s, became legal again after prohibition, will it drive more widespread use? And if it does, then will it drive more revenue and more dividend checks from this company? I think the answer is probably yes, although we still don't have the votes in Washington yet to legalize it federally. We are seeing state by state, more states embrace it. And I think ultimately over time, we will have federal legalization of marijuana. And if we do, that would be a good tailwind for owning this stock. So IIPR is the symbol there. And that's my final one of the day, Joe.
Awesome. All right. So I think we'll leave it at there. Yeah, this has gotten a bit drawn out. So we hope you've stuck with us for the whole show. And we'll be back again next week. Hope you all have a great weekend and a great next week.